When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm ready to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
Sunday, May 26th, the greatest spectacle in racing returns. The Indianapolis 500 on NBC and Peacock. 33 of the world's fastest drivers go head-to-head for a chance to kiss the bricks, taste the milk, and claim their place in racing history. Experience the drama, the pageantry, the tradition. Live from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indy 500. Sunday, May 26th on NBC and Peacock. Or listen on Sirius XM NBC Sports Channel.
Right? I went from being the number one draft pick to being everybody laugh at me. But guess what? I'm about that business. I'm outworking everybody at my position. I know that right here. Right? But I'm doing things every single day. Commit to the dream.
Jameis Winston working hard, outworking everybody. That's look. Hey, I want to see him be successful. I want to see him get the most out of his abilities. I love these experiments. What went wrong with a guy in his first stop? What can go better now? And he still had a 5,000-yard passing season.
Yeah.
We focus on the 30 interceptions. He still threw for 5,000 yards in the Bruce Arians no risk it, no biscuit offense. You tell a guy no risk it, no biscuit, he's going to risk it, and sometimes he's not going to get the biscuit. But he got 5,000 yards, and he got more than 30 touchdowns. We don't talk about that as much as we talk about the 30 picks. I don't think the Saints can go wrong with Winston or Taysom Hill, and I think Sean Payton's going to find a way to use both of them. And I have a feeling, even without Drew Brees, the Saints are still going to be the Saints.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I mean, you know, Jameis Winston, you know, you made a lot of great points there. You know, as we've talked about a lot, there's the high level of play is really high. Like, it's awesome. It's like, wow, look at these plays, unbelievable. Yeah, the bad ones are really bad, like we've talked about. You know, I've got a chance to meet Jameis Winston twice in my life, and he just exudes love of football and has the personality, I think, and the demeanor to be a special leader and do those type of things. You know, he just obviously missed a little polish, maybe the little coaching, how to approach your job. Hopefully he's learned that here in New Orleans. Hopefully he has, because I like you, I do think he's, you know, capable of special things. And I wouldn't be shocked if he took over this year and, like, did some special things to where we're going, whoa, Jameis Winston, look at this year he's having, the stats, the quarterback rating, all of that. That wouldn't be surprising to me.
It's a conversation we had 2 days ago about Trevor Lawrence. Once you get to the NFL, how hard are you coached? What kind of coaching are you getting? How are you being pressed to do the things you need to do to improve as a player? And in Tampa Bay, it was Dirk Cutter, who was offensive coordinator and then became the head coach. And then it was Bruce Arians. And now it's Sean Payton. And yes, we'll see what Payton can bring out of Jameis Winston, the way that he brought things out of Drew Brees that
– yeah.
If the Chargers knew Drew Brees could do them, they wouldn't have gotten Phillip Rivers in 2004, and Brees would have become one of the best quarterbacks of all time as a member of the Chargers, not as a member of the Saints. So it is going to be interesting to see how it plays out going forward. This year, just like with Winston in 2015, a quarterback presumed to be the first overall pick in 2015. It was Winston, then it was Marcus Mariota. It could go three, four. It will go three, could go four. Maybe go five deep in the first six or seven picks. That's good news for Stephen Jones and the Dallas Cowboys as the quarterbacks fly off the board. He appeared yesterday on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Here's Stephen Jones talking about the Cowboys' draft strategy this year, given where they are.
you know our standing policy here. We don't want you to have to horn your answer in or anything, but if you're Sertan about who y'all are going to take, we will give you we will give you a clean slater to go ahead and tell us what is going to happen in the draft.
You know, pretty much unanimous people are thinking there's five first round quarterbacks. That certainly helps us out since we signed our quarterback of the future just this spring, and no, he's our answer to that riddle. But we think going to get some great opportunities because of the depth, not only at quarterback, but offense in general. And, you know, we certainly want to improve our defensive football team. So certainly the top end of that draft helps us in terms of what we might see there defensively. Certainly this should be pushing some defensive football players our direction.
Absolutely will push defensive players their direction. They may have a dilemma. Top defensive player on the board versus Kyle Pitts or versus a tackle or but it could play out. The nine selections in front of the Cowboys all are offensive. Yeah. That's a way it could happen. And the Cowboys would have their pick of all the defensive players in the draft. Edge rusher, middle linebacker, corner, any area they want to address, they're going to address it. And they may have the ability to trade down as well. Chris, we talked about that dynamic last hour.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are a team where the power structure is going to be there next year. Maybe they see an opportunity to move back a little bit, pick up some more lottery tickets, maybe some for next year where they have a better chance to scout. But either way, when you have multiple needs, always better to consider sliding back if you can.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, really, it's going to be interesting. They are sitting in a pretty spot. I mean, as far as like a defensive needs, you know, I could sit there and say maybe Denver might be a team that looks for defense, right? Maybe a little bit. I think you could put them in that conversation, but not the same positions I don't think Dallas is looking for. Dallas has got, you know, two things I think you look at. Yeah, I think they could use a legit, you know, edge pass rusher opposite of Lawrence. I think that's like a real thing, at least to me, or some difference-making defensive lineman. I don't think any D tackle is worth 10 there. So maybe if they wanted to go that route, they trade down there, you know. But corner pass rusher certainly, and like, you know, I heard the radio host there making the Patrick Surtain jokes and all that. I don't know. If you made me say who the Cowboys are going to pick at number 10 right now, it would be that guy. You know, they don't have corners. I think Surtain really fits the kind of Seattle, Atlanta, you know, Dan Quinn scheme, right? You know, he's a bigger guy. I don't think he's like the best man-to-man corner, but I think he's really smart and can do everything real good. So he would fit everything that way. That makes sense. So if they stay at 10, I'm expecting it to be Patrick Surtain. If they drop down, I think they're probably looking for some sort of defensive lineman that they feel like they could get just a little bit later in the draft and get some picks like you're talking about.
Patrick Surtain over your guy, Caleb Farley? How dare you?
Well, Caleb Farley, to me, no doubt is the guy. But that's Mike, that's the amazing thing. I mean, I don't know where he goes. Opt out, back surgeries, all of that. He's a freak show. You know, maybe that's why they trade down. Maybe they realize like, hey, wait, we could get Caleb Farley maybe at 18, 20, something like that. You know, maybe that's why they do. Maybe they don't feel comfortable about taking him at 10, but they'd feel better at 20. That's a possibility. You know, the other thing I look at too, you know, with like Jalen Phillips, the same thing. Jalen Phillips for my money. And I, you know, I heard, Gil Brandt, right? The other day I was reading an article on him, and he made a comment about, you know, the best pure pass rusher, the guy that could be a star out of the defense is Jalen Phillips. Now, I mean, Gil Brandt's around the Cowboys a lot. You know, I would think he'd be their type of guy too. But, you know, again, the concussion history, all of that stuff, missed football 2 years ago by sitting out and all of that. Maybe that's why they trade down too. Maybe they got their eye on him. They don't feel comfortable at 10 and they can go, wait, we can get him maybe at 18 or 20 or something like that. So interesting spot for the Cowboys and a lot of intrigue with this draft. Holy cow.
You mentioned Gil Brandt. I got so much respect for Gil Brandt.
Yeah.
89, still going strong.
Crazy.
And you know, the rest of us can only hope that that at that age, number one, we're still around. Number two, we're able to do anything. And number three, we're able to do the thing that we love. And we still have a love for it after that many years, to still have the passion. It really is a remarkable story, and good that he finally got in the Hall of Fame as he deserved to be. All right, let's take a look at some prop bets on the defensive side of the ball, given that the Cowboys will be, or at least should be, looking in that direction. First corner drafted, the points bet odds are available, and as always, our odds come from them. There's Patrick Surtain, minus 300, the clear favorite. J.C. Horn, plus 200. Your guy Caleb Farley, plus 1,500. Looks like the folks in Vegas think that it would be Patrick Surtain to the Cowboys at 10, or maybe to someone else before then.
Yeah, I would think that that's the first guy off the board. You know, clean medical history, been coached by Nick Saban, you know, has all the attributes you want. To me, the one thing you've heard me say continually about Surtain is just, I wish he was a little faster. You know, I do think he's going to have some issues matching up man-to-man with the elite receivers in football, the speed guys that way. You know, that's to me where Caleb Farley, I don't question that at all. I've never seen someone that big run the way Caleb Farley does. But, yeah, I think when you take all into account, I think Surtain is going to be the first guy off the board. You know, it'll be interesting. It's a good corner group. It really is. I think some of these guys in this group are a little overrated for my money. You know, again, I don't know how you can rank, and this makes sense to you, Mike. I don't know how you can rank a corner like a top 20 pick, a top 10 pick, that kind of stuff, if they don't run 4-3. You know, the great corners in the history of the sport run 4-3 or better. That, you just go through it. That's it. How do you expect them to cover the really fast receivers in football if they're a tenth of a second slower? And the receiver,
you got to be able to recover. I've heard you say this before. You got to be able to recover when they make the move. When they zig, and you thought they were going to zag, you got to have the ability to close the ground.
That's where I err on a little bit of just pure speed when I evaluate corners, and I have a decent history with corners evaluation. But it's an interesting topic, and some of these corners that we even had on the list there, you know, they're zone guys where I'm going to go. You can't put him on an island. They didn't even trust him in college to be on an island. And now you're going to say, okay, we're going to draft him in the top 25 picks? Like that to me doesn't add up sometimes.
The two guys at the top of the odds that we showed from Points Bet, Patrick Surtain the second, J.C. Horn, both the sons of NFL players.
Yeah,
now
cool.
Surtain's dad was a corner. J.C. Horn's dad, Joe Horn, was a receiver. What is the factor? Is there a factor? Does it count? Does it matter if dad was an NFL player?
I think
does that help a guy?
I do. I think it does help a guy. I think the big thing is where coaches, front office people, you know, they feel comfortable and wait, this guy grew up in this. He knows what life is like in the NFL. He knows what to expect. And, you know, more times than not, knows what it takes to be a professional and play in the league. I think that's the positives. You know, they realize, like, okay, more times than not, it's like, hey, this guy grew up in this. He's a gym rat. This is what he likes to do. He knows everything about the sport. There's going to be no shocks. He understands the business, everything like that. I think that's the value that, you know, coaches and GMs look at with, you know, sons of ex-players and things like that.
Asante Samuel Jr. also in the draft. Asante Sr. was a Patriots standout, went to the Eagles, got a huge contract. Last year, Antoine Winfield Jr., who I thought should have gone higher than he did.
Definitely.
Buccaneers get him, and he ends up being a key member of that defense. That's another reason. And we know how the cycle works. A guy comes in, his dad played, he does really well. All of a sudden, more attractive. Go back to 2004, quarterback gets drafted. His dad was a really good quarterback. He doesn't do so well. All of a sudden, the son of a player isn't as attractive. You didn't see where I went there, did you?
Well, because you said 2004. I was drafted in 2003. I thought you were talking about Eli. I was like, what is he talking about, Eli?
I'm talking about the 2004 draft because it was the 2003 draft where you entered the league.
Oh, okay.
By that draft, they're saying, forget about the son of the guy who played. So, all right, let's move on. Who will be the first defender drafted regardless of position? What does Points Bet say about that? Drum roll, please. Surtain, over under for him, 10.5. Michael Parsons, 12.5 for him. There's Horn at 13.5. Quiddy Pay, the edge rusher from Michigan, 16.5. Christian Barmore, 23.5. Gregory Rousseau, 30.5. It's so hard to tell this year.
Yeah.
It really is. There's none of these that jump off to me as wrong or right.
Right.
We just don't know. We just don't know. I think Surtain is the one that's the most intriguing because, like you said, if he's there at 10, it seems like the Cowboys would slash should take him.
Right.
So I would go under on him. For the rest, who the hell knows?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. Listen, the one I don't – J.C. Horn, you know, we were just talking about. I like him a lot. You know, I see a lot of things like that here recently where it's top 15, top 20. I'm shocked by that. I really am. I'm shocked. Good player, but, you know, he would be that guy, again, that I would say – I don't know if the speed is quite special enough for me to take him in the top 20 and think he's going to lock down like top end receivers. It's the top two guys of the list for me, Mike, as far as the first two defenders off the board. We talked about the Cowboys, right? With Surtain at 10 and all of that. So that's certainly a possibility. You know, I brought up the Broncos before in that conversation about a team that could be looking defense. I look at them at 9 to think, hey, Vic Fangio came from the 49ers. What did he have there? Navarro Bowman, Patrick Willis. He went to the Chicago Bears defensive coordinator. They signed Danny Trevathan, drafted Roquan Smith in the top 10. The middle linebacker is really probably the most glaring need on their football team. Michael Parsons is that guy I look at to go, he could go number 9. You know, he's too special of a specimen. He's right up there with the Devin Bushes and the Devin Whites of the world who we saw both go in the top 10 or 11, you know, what, 2 years ago. So I could see him being the first guy off the board of the Broncos at number 9. I wouldn't be shocked by that.
Here's my open plea
for
J.C. Horn.
Right.
Wherever he lands, wherever he plays, get a couple of old flip phones.
Yeah, definitely.
Put them under the goalpost
right.
every game. You get fined, we will raise the money. We will do the GoFundMe to raise the money for the fine. I know that no one else is supposed to pay the fine. Fine. We will raise the money to pay the fine. And you actually got to call dad. That's the other part of it, too. You got to go fish out the phone and call dad after scoring your first NFL touchdown. It may take a while playing defense, but I think it's worth it.
Well,
and it would be money well spent, especially since it would be someone else's money that we'd be raising to pay for that fine.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, yeah, it would be really cool. He is a stud as far as his body makeup, his strength, his physicality, his attitude. I mean, I love that aspect of him. He's got a no-nonsense, in-your-face type of style that I do love. There's no doubt. It'd be cool if he did do that at some point in his career. You know, flip phone, I guess he could still buy them. Or maybe he just, you know, iPhones it, right? He's got gloves on. It's going to be hard to dial on the flip phone. He could just pick up the iPhone and say, hey, Siri, call dad, and that might be a cool thing to do. So I'm with you there. I hope he infuses that into a celebration at some point.
He's got to get Nike to make him a set of gloves that maybe has just tiny
just
little
holes
at the tips of the fingers
yeah.
or the different material so you can still punch out on the phone. But either way, we hope that at some point there will be an homage to what his dad did all those years ago, although it was a significant fine, a very significant fine that was imposed on Joe Horn. How many defenders go in the first half of the draft? Let's see what point. Do we have a points bet odds on that or no? Do we? No. Just curiosity.
Yeah.
Look, I think we may not see any until 10. After that, I don't know. 4? Is 4 too high? What's the over? How about over under 3.5? What are you taking?
Ooh,
3.5.
That's a good
top half.
Okay, that's a good one there. Man, I would say I'm gonna go. I'll go over. Did you say 3.5? I'll go over.
3.5.
I'm gonna say 4. But that, man, it's dicey when you sit there and look at that, especially you go the top half of the draft. Your Vikings football team, I would think, would be thinking defense, right? I would think the Giants are thinking defense. Cowboys, Broncos. Those are the 4 I'm kind of leaning on. I don't know about, you know, the Cardinals, the Chargers, the Eagles. They could go a lot of different ways there. So I'll go in with the over as far as if you set it at 3.5. What do you think?
What do you think the Broncos do if Justin Fields is there at 9?
That's like, again, one of those where you brought it up earlier, right? Where it's like, wait, the coaching staff's butts could be on the hot seat. The personnel people just got there and might be going, we're looking in the future. We don't care that your butt's hot on the seat, whatever there. So that's where it's a tough decision that way. Man, I would just think with where they are as an organization right now, if I'm Denver – I'm staying with Drew Lock, and I'm calling the 49ers and trying to get Jimmy Garoppolo. That's what I'm trying to do right now. That would be my play if I'm them. You know, again, I never
I'd want Teddy.
Okay, or him too. Either way, either one, that type of guy. Again, I'm not a big believer in Justin Fields as a top 10 pick. I'm not. I've said that from the start. I really think he's somewhere between 20 and 32 for me. There's some issues in his game that I'm just not sold that are fixable, and that would scare the hell out of me. So, yeah, that's what I'll say about the Broncos.
Thing to remember about the Broncos dynamic, and you hit the nail on the head. Vic Fangio may be on the hot seat. George Payton, the new GM, isn't. And Payton ascended to this job after years of being in the NFL. He passed on opportunities to interview for other GM jobs. He surely has a list of coaches he's been scouting. When you're a scout, you're not just scouting players. You're scouting coaches. He's got a list of coaches he wants to hire. He's already got it. He comes to the job with that list. And unless, coincidentally, Vic Fangio is number one on the list or somewhere in the top five, Payton's not going to care if Fangio ends up getting fired after this year. A lot of times when you get a new GM, when you have an existing
buys
head coach,
you an extra year.
He wants to get that coach out. And you're right. It gives you a grace period because you're not judged until you get your coach.
Exactly.
Now, if your team ends up pretty good, then you're stuck with that guy for a few years, like Jerry Angelo was with Dick Geron all those years ago when Angelo wanted to pivot to Nick Saban or Lovie Smith, and Geron won the division, so it ended up being a three-year forced marriage. But, yeah, Payton isn't going to care unless Vic Fangio is at or near the top of George Payton's list of coaches that he's been waiting to work with.
Yeah,
all right, let's take a break. We will be talking, I haven't mentioned this earlier, Rashad Weaver, University of Pittsburgh edge rusher, going to be joining us live here as we're 8 days away from the start of the 2021 NFL Draft. We'll be back with Rashad Weaver here on PFC Live right after this.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again!
Gold for the United States!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history.
Leaves his calling card.
And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record!
Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. Friday, July 26th on NBC and Peacock.
Rashad Weaver was one of the surprises of, of all the edge guys to me. Big, long, fluid athlete with sneaky explosion. He's first off the ball every snap. Coming around the edge, being able to dip that shoulder. The way he moves and stuff reminds me of Montez Sweat. Dominates tight ends. Like, oh, how dare you block me? Get out of my face. I'm going to make the tackle. I don't know why there's not a little more chatter about this guy out there altogether.
Going to be a little more chatter right now about Rashad Weaver. Here he is, Chris Sims' number four prospect at the edge rusher position. Pittsburgh Panther defensive end Rashad Weaver. Rashad, good morning. How are you, pal?
Good morning. I'm good, you know. Just counting down the days, working out, doing what I can to be ready, get there for a rookie minicamp, whatever team decides to, you know, pick me and bet on me.
Got to be a weird, weird time in your life as you just wait for this arbitrary selection. Where am I going to be living for the next 4 years, maybe a lot longer than that. How do you deal with that uncertainty where basically you look at the map and there's 30 different cities where you could end up, and you're going to find out just like the rest of us do when somebody gives you a phone call coming up here in 8, 9, or 10 days?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I'm a super structured person and like to have a plan and stuff. So that's kind of the stuff I've been stressing over, like, where am I moving, all this stuff. I'm trying to leave Pittsburgh, go back home to Florida for a month, then where am I going to go after that? But actually, team-wise, you know, I know wherever I get picked, it'll be a blessing and all the work will pay off. So I'm not really worried about what city, but it's just the waiting game until I get there, you know, that stresses me a little bit.
Like, what is the approach right now as far as, like, training and things like that? Do you take some time off and try to just enjoy the next 10 days? Or are you still putting it pretty hard? Just for all those viewers out there, I want to know, you were eating some food while we were on commercial break. You're trying to keep that that weight up. I like that. But, like, yeah, what's your approach right now 10 days out?
Yeah, no, I mean, after pro day, I took off. Our pro day was on Wednesday. I took the rest of that week off, and I got right back to it that upcoming week. These past 2 weeks, me, Jimmy Morrissey, and Bryce Hargrove have been at the facility with Coach D from the strength staff and, you know, getting in those grinding days. You know, we're putting in work. We're having finishers every day. We're doing all type of stuff, you know, just putting in work, hitting the field, getting our wind up, short sprints, long running. And we're just working because we know once we get there, we're back at the bottom of the totem pole, and we have to, you know, gain the trust of the coaches and of the players that are already there one way or another.
Let's peel back the curtain a little bit, too. Rashad was very polite. He began to eat during the break because he saw that Chris was eating. He did not realize that Chris wasn't eating. Chris had his big, giant makeup brush out, and he was digging in. Because, Rashad, I'm sure you can see Chris. It's not a five-head. It's a six-head on Chris. So good on Rashad to make sure that he had time to have a little breakfast while we were waiting to come back from break. Hey, Rashad, I pride myself on my research. I do some high-level research on the people we have on the show. And here's the best one I got for you. Your middle name is awesome. Rashad Capone Weaver. Tell me about how you got Capone as your middle name.
Man, I might have to throw that on a jersey one game if they let me do that. But yeah, my middle name, I mean, you know, honestly, I have super young parents. You know, they had me when they were teens. And, you know, my mom was like a tomboy when she was in high school. And, you know, I think she just stumbled across that from Al Capone and she liked it. And that's what she threw in as my middle name.
It's awesome. I love it. It's a great name. Florio loves it. He perked up when he heard that. All right. I'm always intrigued by this, Rashad. Of course, as you know, I'm a big fan of yours. I think you're without a doubt one of the five best edge pass rushers in the draft. But, like, how do you deal with all it's nitpicking time. People are always picking away at your game. How do you deal with all the negative stuff you hear, you know, out there in the media and from certain scouts in the media and all that type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, again, I appreciate you. I feel like you recognize the game and you see what I bring to it. And with that, I think it's just kind of people that they're either bored or they truly don't know what they're talking about. Because some of the stuff you mentioned, you know, where I see myself that I try not to see, right. It's just not feedback I get from teams or coaches. It's almost the exact opposite. So, you know, at sometimes you wish you just you got noticed more by media. But at the end of the day, media doesn't matter. They're not going to be the ones calling my phone on draft day. They're not the ones I've sat in Zooms with that told me what they love about my game and stuff like that. So, you know, that's what I kind of try to focus on. And over the past couple months, I've unfollowed more and more draft accounts because they don't know what they're truly talking about at some points. And again, they're not who matters. You know, I know they have a job and they have to try to guess what they know best or try to get clicks and stuff like that. But I think it is what it is.
Mike, can I ask one more question just off that real quick? Just if you don't mind, just I'm curious too. Like, don't you – some of the stuff is crazy. Like, no bend, you know, not a twitchy athlete. Like, I don't know. Your bend is what jumped out to me. I was like, this guy really is great coming around the edge, dipping the shoulder, all that. Do you feel like you at least answered questions with your pro day where you put up some pretty big numbers where I think people are going to go, whoa, wait, this guy's a better athlete than I thought?
Yeah, and I think even with that, again, with the bend, I think meeting with – outside linebacker coaches, DN coaches, all that. They talk about my ankle and how I've been for being a 6'4", 6'5", guy.
Right.
Getting down there, my pass rush moves and all that type of stuff. And again, I'm the first off the line. You know, some of the coaches even talk about sometimes it doesn't look like you're moving as fast as you are just because how lengthy you
are.
Yeah,
you're
long. They realize it and stuff like that. But, yeah, with Pro Day, I think it went great. You know, I could have had a little faster 40. I'll blame it on the new turf. It was like 4 inches tall. But everything else was great. You know, my agility and my drills and everything, you know, I knocked it out the water. And I think it just got paid less attention to than if it was somebody else because, you know, I told my agent, it just doesn't fit the narrative of me, you know. Coming in running a sub 7 3 cone, somebody else does that they like, you know, it's going to be on Twitter for the next month and they're going to be blowing it up. You know, I run a decent shuttle, you know, it was a good shuttle to other people, but I ran faster shuttles than that at my training. You know, I could have ran in the 4.1s on my shuttle easily. But you know, those just don't fit the narrative to me and what they want to say about me. So I think it just kind of got swept under the rug. But again, you know, the people that matter seen it.
Hey, Rashad, injuries happen in football. You had the torn ACL in 2019. What did you learn the most about yourself going through that very grueling and demanding and challenging rehab to get back to 100%?
Yeah, so for me, I'd say something I always knew about myself, but just even showed it more, is I'm super mentally tough, and, you know, I'm it is what it is type of person. Like, it happens, so let's grind. But something I really learned about myself and grew was my patience, you know. It just wasn't my year for me to go be an All-American and go to the NFL that year. You know, I just needed to, you know, go with the game plan and the timeline of my life and, you know, rehab and get better mentally at football, physically, my body, and then come out in 2020 and take a full opportunity of every chance given, especially with the COVID year and not knowing how many games we play.
But, all right, fun question. All right. I mean, because I do my research, too. And, you know, of course, know what you look like. Where'd your blonde hair go, man? I thought we were going to be two blondes on here together talking ball. What the hell happened with you, man? Come on. Yeah, we got the dirt on you.
Hey, I had the blonde this past season. That's the first time I ever did anything to my hair. Again, like I don't step out of my comfort zone that much, but I was like, it's COVID, so no one's going to see me except for at the games.
We see you.
If I don't like it that much, I can cut it off. But yeah, it grew out. I got it a little bit cut off every time I went and got a haircut, and it's all gone now.
Okay. It's always jarring when you see a defensive player, especially a defensive lineman, with a number in the teens. 17, we flashed that up there a few times. What put you in number 17 as a defensive end?
So I've been playing tackle football since I was in third grade. You know, I started out with tackle football and all that. And, you know, like a lot of guys in college or even NFL, when you're younger, you play quarterback, you know, because they want the best athlete, best player to have the ball in their hand. And growing up, Peyton Manning was my favorite player, so I just got one number under him, and I played quarterback my whole life up until high school. So that's just kind of where I got that. I switched over to a different number in high school because I played tight end and DN for the first time, and then when I got back to college, I just texted Coach Narduzzi as a freshman, and I was like, can I have 17? You know, let's go back to the roots where I started wearing when I was, you know, a kid playing football. And, you know, they're making the rule now. Outside linebackers might be able to get that number. So hopefully when the team drafts me as an outside linebacker, I can maybe throw it on if there's not a skill position that'll take it from me.
Yeah, I bet. I know. I figured you'd have your eye on that 17. And, I mean, can you throw it? Can you throw the football a little bit? I'd like to see you throw. I can't picture your big butt dropping back and being a quarterback.
I could throw before these shoulders got banged up playing D-line.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. You know, I brought up the – like Montez Sweat comparison a little bit when I was doing, you know, you got a pro player comparison, right? Who's the guy, you know, in the NFL that you look at or you model your game at or you think you're maybe the most similar to?
Yeah, so I mean, naturally, I just always go for the big guys, you know, that are explosive and adequate speed, but maybe not 4.4s, 4.5, those type of guys. So I've watched a lot of, you know, Chandler Jones.
Right.
You know, that's a lengthy guy that just, you know, destroys guys with his length and is unorthodox with his moves and does some crazy stuff to utilize his own skill set. Watch some Jason Pierre-Paul, another big defensive end that just gets up the field and causes havoc in the backfield. Everyone's favorite, you know, especially as me growing up, J.J. Watt, just because he can play up and down the line And then he can impact the game on any play, which I feel like I can. You know, he stops the run, he gets to the quarterback, and he deflects passes, which I just feel like that's all of my skill set. So those are just a few of the guys, you know, I try to take from and watch.
Rashad, you strike me as someone who is very structured, very organized, a man with a plan, guy who wants to know where he is right now, where he's going, but for the fact that nobody knows where you're going in the draft. But tell us what you're going to be doing during the draft. I got a feeling you've got it all mapped out, where you're going to be, who's going to be there, where the phone's going to be, which channel you're going to have on this TV, what food's going to be there. Give us an idea of what it's going to look like to be Rashad Weaver on draft night.
Yes, I mean, I already got my outfit out. I got my outfit ready. I'll be down in Cooper City, Florida, with my best friend from here at Pet Pit, Keyshawn, my best friend from high school, mom, dad, sister, both sets of grandparents, and my best friend from high school's parents because we're having it at his house. I know they're still asking me what kind of food. I haven't decided yet, but I know what the dessert is already. And then, you know, I haven't decided. I'm either not going to watch it and just wait for my phone to ring. I'm going to go sit in the other room while they watch it, or I'll be sitting there staring at the screen, sweating. But that's the main game plan.
All right. So the main game plan, I want to give me a little scouting report on the giddy up. I want to know what you're wearing. Okay. Let me hear it. Come on.
It's a surprise.
Okay,
nah,
fine.
Our own clothing brand, me and my teammate here, called Dreams to Reality. So I'll have a nice shirt on there.
Cool.
Nice pair of shoes to match the shirt, and I'll be relaxed in a pair of shorts, some gym shorts to complete the outfit. You know, I'll be in nice sunny South Florida.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What dessert? What are we talking about there? What are we gonna crush?
The first on the list was Bundt Cake. You know, they got this Bundt Cake place down there. It's amazing, but I only have a few pieces because I'm trying to keep this weight under control. You see me eating because I have my meal prep. You know, that's healthy food. So.
Okay.
Hey, Rashad, we wish you all the best, and we'll be thinking of you as you're picked, and we can't wait to see where you end up. Congratulations to you. All the best to your family. It's great you got all your grandparents. It's great they're going to be able to share that moment with you. Tell your mom, excellent selection on the middle name. And we'll see where Rashad Capone Weaver gets drafted coming up here in 8 or 9 days. Thanks, Rashad. All the best to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
See you, guy. Be good,
all right,
man.
There he is, Rashad Weaver. Mac, back with more PFT Live right after this.
I think my home the best.
The bet wore the Tom Brady jersey, but made it clear Patrick Mahomes is the best. Says Tom Brady in response, I think actions always speak louder than words. Mahomes with the response, I guess we will see in 20 years. Boom! he's going to be counting championships on those fingers. Hey, and here's the reality, Chris. Mahomes had a chance to cut it to 6-2 this year.
That would have been interesting.
Now it's 7-1. Big gap for Patrick Mahomes to make up over the next 20 years.
Yeah, no, big gap. I mean, you know, again, football, you need to depend on all the support system there, you know, and that's the big thing. Can the support system around Patrick Mahomes be that good for that long? We've really never seen any team do it that long other than the New England Patriots. It's the only team in the history of the sport. 2 decades, they win them. They win both decades. So that's going to be the tough part to add to that conversation.
All right, draft today. We got another draft inspired by the Soccer Super League, because if you haven't heard, it's already dead. It's gone.
Dead.
It's over. Kaput. Finito. So today's draft, short-lived NFL stories. This one was not easy to research, Christopher. You got the trivia question for me. Fire away.
No, it was not. I think got some good creative ones, though, that I came up with. So, but yeah, it was not the easiest one. You couldn't do this one off the top of your head. All right. This is an easy question. All right. What stat did Brady best Mahomes in last season? Passing yards, passing TDs, or QB rating?
No, it'd be QB rating.
I think that's rating? a... Wow. Passing
wow.
TDs.
He had more passing. Wow.
He was what the only – Brady and Rodgers were the right? only ones to get to 40 or above, maybe. I believe, right? Oh, and Russell Wilson got to 42. Okay.
Maybe. It all wasn't right, so. That easy. All right, you got the first pick. You got yes. the first pick. Go.
Okay. I think – when I think of short-lived stories that I was excited for – that fizzled out, but still fizzled out in kind of a fun way, just like, you know, this Super League or whatever. How about Antonio Brown to the Raiders? Okay, talk about a short-lived story with a lot of action in a short time. Oh, gosh, you know, whoa, it's going to be awesome. What's Antonio Brown and John Gruden going to be like? When's it going to blow up? When are they going to get in the first fight, you know, on the sideline because Antonio didn't get 100 catches in one game and all that. I was so excited to see that whole play out. How's John Gruden going to use him? Oh, wait, the guy doesn't like his helmet. Oh, he doesn't want to come to practice because he doesn't like the helmet change. All of that. Then he freezes his feet and does all of those damn things. So to me, that's one of the best short-lived stories I can think of here in recent history.
Yeah, he never actually played in a regular season game right. for the Oakland Raiders. He was cut Labor Day weekend at his demand, at his insistence, and off he went. All right, I think it was the weekend of the first game. It was the weekend of the first game because he had a Monday nighter that year. He was cut on Saturday. They were getting ready to play on Monday night. I'm surprised you didn't take this one. The very, very short stint of Bill Belichick as HC
it's
of
a good
the
one.
NYJ. Written on a cocktail napkin, I resign as HC of the NYJ. He was the head coach for like a day, had that clunky, clumsy press conference, becomes the head coach of the New England Patriots, and the rest is history. So from short-lived to one of the greatest tenures we've ever seen from a head coach, all in very close proximity, Chris.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty amazing 48 hours or so there. I mean, it really was, and you know, even the stories, you know, behind it as far as Belichick and Parcells that caused a little issue with their relationship for a few years, everything like that. Pretty amazing. It really is. Okay. My next one, I think I'm going to have to go with Elway to the Colts. All right. That's like one of the short-lived ones that will always jump out to me there. Of course, they pick him number one. He's told everybody he doesn't want to really play there, do that. You're going, wait, what's going to happen? This guy's great career. You know, he goes and says, hey, the hell with it. I'm going to go play third base in the Yankees, does all that kind of crap. And eventually, you know, it gets sorted out to where they trade him to Denver. But I guess why it's such a great short-lived story, too, is, you know, to my knowledge, nobody did that. He was the first one to really do that, right? To kind of go like, I'm not playing for a team. I remember seeing the old clips of like Terry Bradshaw at the time going like, who the hell does John Elway think he is doing this stuff? Remember all that? So I thought that was a pretty good short-lived story for me.
I agree. That was a good one. Next one for me, and I got two more that I really like, and okay. I'm going to pick this one because I don't think you're going to get the third one. I don't think you're even aware of the third one. The second one is Bill Parcells as head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because that's where he was going. That's what he was doing.
Right.
Mike Tannenbaum actually took the job as the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was ready to go, and then it's time to walk to the altar, and Parcells says, nah, I'm good. See you later, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So
I
still remember that one vividly. And that was the first domino that ultimately resulted in John Gruden getting that job in 2002.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I had totally forgot about that little chain of events there. And that'd have been interesting.
Just think Parcells could have been your first head coach.
It'd been amazing.
Wouldn't that have been perfect?
That'd have been crazy. That'd have been crazy. You know, my dad always said he thought his first name began with an F with Bill Parcells. I probably would have had the same one. So that's a pretty good. All right, I'm going a fun one here. Short-lived NFL stories. How about the Vikings' chances of making the Super Bowl in the 2000 NFC Championship game? That was a short-lived story. You want to talk about, hey, Vikings going to go back to the Super Bowl. That's awesome offense. We're going to do it. Mike Florio's going to be real happy. Boom, that game was over in the end of the first quarter. See ya, Vikings. Short-lived story that lasted 3 minutes of hope for the Florio family.
Yes.
Sorry, I just had to give that to you.
The only blowout in a conference championship game ever. How'd that Super Bowl turn out for the Giants that year, by the way?
It was a little bit of a blowout. Sorry. Yep, it was a blowout.
So that would have been a short-lived story as well, from the same cycle, the same season.
Technically, I think the Giants hung in there longer than your Vikings did, so I'll at least give them that.
That was the first Super Bowl that I actually worked. I didn't go to it, but I was in the business then.
Yeah.
And I said, based upon my careful analysis of the team, whoever scores the first touchdown wins the game.
Ooh.
And for a change, one of the only times in my life I was right. First team that scored a touchdown won that game, just because there weren't going to be many touchdowns scored, but the Ravens ended up scoring far more than we expected.
Right.
Last one for me, and you may not be aware that this even happened, but for a very short period of time in early 1996, when the L.A. market was vacant, the Seahawks were going to move there.
Mm.
They told their employees, we're heading to L.A. They were going to play at the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl official said, we don't know what the hell they're talking about. The Seahawks said, pack it up, off we go. And the league got involved and basically said, oh, you guys aren't going anywhere. But there was a short period of time. And that's the one that, to me, seems the most like this Super League thing. Like, here we go, we're doing this. And it was dead in 48 hours. And the Seahawks stayed in Seattle. Paul Allen bought the team, and they're there for good.
I, like, vaguely remember that. You know, a little bit, but I didn't realize it had gotten that serious to where, like, Seattle was really, like, going, no, we're going, pack the building up. I don't know if I remembered that. So that's a good one. I like that a lot. That would have been interesting. The Los Angeles Seahawks. There is a C there.
They told the coaches they were moving to Pasadena, and employees were advised to pack their personal effects because the team was going to lock its offices by noon because they were moving to Anaheim and they were going to take over Rams Park as their headquarters because the Rams had moved to St. Louis.
Right. Wow. That's some story. What was that other one you were talking about? Didn't you have one more that you said you wanted to get to, or no? Was that it?
No. That was the Parcells one. Okay. I think I had a couple others that were just filler if you took any of my ideas, but they weren't great.
Yeah.
I was going to say Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer. That was a short-lived story.
Foxborough forever.
Isn't it funny how quickly that went away?
Yeah. Well, I think when people hear facts, they start to go, oh, wait, yeah, you're right. I was stupid to think that. Yeah. And
everybody got it out of their system very quickly, right. And now it's gone, and it will never be brought up again. Pete mentioned a good one, Frank Gore to the Eagles, one of the few players exercising his prerogative to agree to terms during the negotiating window, but ultimately not sign the contract. Frank Gore did that. Anthony Barr, member of the Jets, that happened, and then it didn't. So it doesn't happen very often, but it definitely does.
I did have Randy Moss part two to the Vikings. That was one more that I was going to take a shot to you with. That was going to have fun with that.
That would have been more of a biting shot, because let me tell you something. I was telling Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings and host on KFAN in Minneapolis. I've been going on his show every week for 15 years. I kept saying to him, 2007, 2008, 2009, Randy Moss is coming back at some point. Mark my words, he's coming back at some point. So I was very vindicated and proud that I was right. And then 3 weeks later, programmatic non-fit is what Brad Childress had to say. Second Brad Childress reference of the day. And the last. More PFT Live right after this. So there's Tom Brady after the boat parade, and there's Ryan Griffin, who was playing the role of making it look like Bernie was alive in that video, right? Ryan Griffin re-signs with the Buccaneers. Longest tenured Buccaneer quarterback.
It's amazing.
If he makes the roster,
It'll
be 7 straight seasons, longest tenured Buccaneers quarterback ever.
That's crazy. It just tells you the trials and tribulations they've had at the quarterback position. And, of course, I was one of them, certainly. But, I mean, it is. To think that they've been around since the late 70s, and this is the longest anybody's ever lasted, pretty crazy. They got to think of something for backup quarterback, though, Mike. You got a team that's Super Bowl. They're a Super Bowl team. You know, and they're not going to be if Ryan Griffin has to come in to play an extended period of time during the year. I'm sorry about that. So they got to do
something. Bridgewater.
That's a good thought.
Teddy Bridgewater. Because look, they wanted him last year.
That's
he was
right.
The second choice behind Tom Brady. Bruce Arians told Peter King that after the dust settled. And very simple. All Teddy Bridgewater has to do is nothing, because he's not getting traded to a team that's going to pay him $17 million this year. He's going to have to take less money to facilitate a trade. So all he's got to do is sit back, cross his arms. Eventually, the Panthers will cut him because they owe him $10. They will owe him $17. They'll cut him and owe him $10. The Bucks will pay him $1.075. The Panthers will pay him the difference, and he'll be on a team in the division, Chris.
Yeah, that's smart. I mean, listen, that's a good place for Teddy Bridgewater to, if he does get a chance to play, he's got a chance for success. There's that drunken
Florio.
That's
it for today. Hey, all right. See you tomorrow.
See ya.